Okay, today we're going to continue our topic of Perek Shira. Today we're up to Gehenon. Today we're going to learn about everything we wanted to know about Gehenon, but we're afraid to ask. Just joking. But it's very bizarre that it's very deep. I remember I was once somewhere and they were talking and they said, oh, he lives in Lakewood. Yeah, he has a son in Lakewood. He has a daughter in Lakewood. Yeah, he has a grandson in Lakewood. Lakewood. So they said, yeah, Lakewood. Everyone has a connection to Lakewood. It's like Gehenon. Everyone ends up, sooner or later, everyone ends up there. Okay. So Gehenna, indeed, the Gemara says, is very, very deep. And it's very bizarre that in Perek Shira, it's the fourth item in the list, in Perek Shira, this Perek tells us that Gehenna has a song every single day. Or every so often, Gehenim sings. The pasuk is in Tehillim, in Mizmar Kuf Zayin, pasuk test, Gehenim Oimer, ki. It's a very strange pasuk. That's what makes this thing so strange. Ki hisbia nefesh shoykeka, v'nefesh re'eva milei toif. That Hashem has satisfied the neshama, the nefesh, that is shoykeka, longing.
Can you just repeat that pasuk?
The source Kuv Zayin.
Repeat the pasuk.
Ki hisbia.
Yeah.
Nefesh shoykeka.
Yeah.
The nefesh re'eva milei tov. That's nusach Ashkenaz, nusach Tsar, not nusach Ashkenaz. Nusach Ashkenaz, we don't focus on Gehenna and Udah.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so the pasuk simply means that Hashem satisfies a nefesh that is shekeka, that is longing, has yearnings. And then the pasuk repeats itself with different words. Hashem satisfies a nefesh re'eva. Ne'ev means hungry, and a soul that is hungry, Hashem fills up with good. What in the world is going on in this pasuk? It's a very, very difficult pasuk. So I didn't see this anywhere, but I think a very similar interpretation of the pasuk. It's written b'loshon sagi nohar. It's written, it's a euphemism. It's saying that, it says here, Hashem satisfies with good. Hashem takes the neshama that is hungry and fills it up with good. Possibly the pasuk is really b'loshon sagi nohar that Gehenim. We're dealing with over here. We're shoyim ha'arudim yimach shemam v'zichram. Let's not focus on it. Let's focus on Gehenim for the real heavy duty wicked Nazi people, real Amalekim, the real evil. You know, let's assume they go to Gehenim. According to many commentators, they don't go to Gehenim. Gehenim is too good for them. But let's work with this assumption that we are accustomed to, that there is a place called Gehenim for these very wicked people. They're going to be there. Their souls will be filled up with good. It's a euphemism. It means that just like in the world of good, we can relate that someone who is hungry is filled up with good. To the extreme opposite, they will be filled to satisfaction with punishment and with destruction and bitterness. Perhaps it's a technique of trying to allow us to appreciate what Gehenna is, because the human mind does not want to focus on evil. And we don't want to focus on punishment, on tsar, on pain. But when you take it and you reverse the concept, and you have an idea where you have a soul that's thirsty, a soul that's hungry, and it's been satisfied. Ah! You're satisfied. I was extremely hungry and thirsty, and now I'm filled up. And then reverse it. And that's what Gehenna is in punishment. You're frightened. It's a very powerful technique in order for the human being to try to relate, to scare himself into what Gehenna is all about, in order to do tshuva and prepare himself in this world to do Torah and mitzvos, ma'asim tov, and nach hashom kam lidei kach, that he should have anything to do with this place called Gerke. That's one just simple idea that perhaps the pasuk is being used to beloshen sagei nohar. Now, first, we have to understand: is this gehenim a gehenim on this world or gehenim in the spiritual? When we discussed the concept last week of Gan Eden, we mentioned that there are two types of Gan Eden. There is a spiritual Gan Eden, which we have no understanding what that is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the Olam HaEmes, Ach HaMeh VeEshem, there's an Olam HaNeshamas, and all different things that happen to the Neshama, which we have no way of understanding what these things are about. But there's also pleasure in this world. Every single person has a certain thing which he enjoys. He wants to go somewhere, have some vacation, some relaxation. There's Gan Eden in this world. There's Gehenim in this world also. There are things which a person does not enjoy, and that is called his Gehenim. And a person has to realize that in this world, when he goes through difficult situations, it's part of Hashem's process. Rachman al-Tzlan, no one should ever want to suffer in any shape or form in anything, but when a person does not have a choice, and we look back at our experience in the past, that we did not have a choice, that we went through difficult experiences, we have to later on realize that we have taken from this good. It's hard to really understand, but it's not necessarily a Gehenim in this world. It could be that it's a Gehenim in the other world, referring to a Gehenim in this world. And every person has their own Gehenim. There are things which bother each person on their level. Okay, another idea about Gehenim is Sefer Melachim. Gehenim is a place. Gei Hinnom, the valley of Hinnom. And what took place in this valley? Terrible things. They were priests, and they would take children, and they had these massive gold or copper statues, and they would put the children on the arms of these statues, and they would heat up the arms, terrible fire, and they would offer these children as a sacrifice, a burnt sacrifice to the god called Molech. And this was the most detestable form of idolatry mentioned in the Torah. Gehinnom was the valley where people would offer sacrifices, child sacrifices, to the Avodah Zarah called Molech. That is what Chazal have taken, that valley of Molech, and have used for the term Gehenim. And that itself is a limud, which means, what is Gehenim? Gehenim, what a child represents the ultimate potential. A child is born to the world, everything is in front of him, the whole world is available to him. He's pure, he's tahor, he's kodosh. There's nothing holding him back from conquering the world and achieving whatever he wants. To take a child and to destroy a child, to destroy such potential for no reason whatsoever because of a mishagas, that is the ultimate pain in this world. And that's really what Gehenim is. When a person recognizes that he had potential to accomplish, to do something, and he foolishly wasted that opportunity, he gave it up and just discarded it, when he contemplates on that event, that thought, that realization is equivalent to offering these children in the valley of Hinnom. That is why Chazal have coined Gehenim, the ultimate pain, based upon the term of Avodah Zarah that was offered in the valley of Gehinnom. Don't waste opportunities in life. Don't waste potential. The wasting of potential opportunity is the ultimate sin and will bring a person the ultimate pain in realizing what he has lost. Now the truth is, I saw in one of the first meetings, if you want to really understand what this pasuk is referring to, the Shir of Gehenim, it's possibly not referring to the beginning of the pasuk. What the Mechaber of Perek Shir was trying to do is just to draw your attention to the Mizmar. It's Mizmar Kuf Zayin. Let me read you some of the psukim. And the Mizmar after this pasuk really describes what happens in Gehenim. It's very frightening. Let me read you some of the psukim and try to translate the words the best that I can. Here we have the pasuk begins with this word, ki hismil mil tezayin. It's pasuk tes. Ki hisbia nefesh shekeka, the nefesh reva milei tov. And then it goes on to explain, yoishvei, those that sit in choyshech v'tzalmoves, asirei oni uvarzel, they're tied up in bands of poverty and barzel of iron, kihimru imrei kel, they have rebelled, they have transgressed against the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'atzas elyon no'atzu, they have rejected the counsel of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'yachna ba'omolibam, now they're humbled in the toil of their heart, kashlu, they have stumbled in ozer, v'yizaku el Hashem v'atzar lohem, and here they cry out to Hashem in their pain, mimitzuko sehem yoshi'em, from their oppression, they cry out that Hashem shall save them. And Hashem answers, Yoitziyei mechoshech v'tzalmoves, Hashem will take them out of their darkness and their shadow of death. U'mosirosehem yinatek, Hashem will break their bonds of torture. And then Yodu laHashem chasto, they'll give thanks to Kadosh Baruch Hu v'nifloesev l'vnei Adam, they'll praise His wonders, ki shibar dalsos nechosh, Hashem will break down these doors of kapu, v'richei barzal yikidea, He cuts down the bars of iron, evilim yiderech pisham, u'meavnoseyem yisanu. That's already a different theme, but it's a little bit, it goes on. But basically the idea is that the Mechaber of Perek Shiru is not really trying to focus on the pasuk of Ki Hispia Nefesh Shekek of Nefesh Reva Milei Tov, because that doesn't fit Gehenna. It doesn't make any sense. It's so frightening, the song of Gehenna, he's quoting the pasuk before, directing your attention to this mizmar to describe what happens in Gehenna. That a person sins, he enters Gehenna, he suffers, and in his suffering he cries out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save him, and Hashem purges the sin from the person. Obviously there's a lot of pain in this process, but eventually he comes out of Gehenna and he sings and he gives thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Gehenna is a temporary...
Yes. The Gehenna is, according to Chazal, it's not more than 12 months. Mishpat Rishon, the Gehenna is Yud Beis Chodesh. Not more than 12 months. And the end of the Mizma goes on to say, Yoidu LaHashem Chasto, they will give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch for His kindness, V'nifl Yosef L'nei Adam, V'yizvichu Zivchei Soida V'sabu Ma'asav Berina. So it's a really, the Perek Shir is all about song, giving song to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Most of the items in Perek Shira, we have the actual song. We're trying always to focus on the unique nature, the unique characteristic of each item in Perek Shira. When we spoke about Shemayim, so we focused that there were two psukim. That's very unique. We focused on the Aretz. Shemayim was the one that actually said what. Shemayim was unique that it actually said its song. Aretz was unique that it had two psukim. Each item has something unique. What is unique about Gehenna is we're not even giving you the song of Gehenna. We're just giving you the address. Here's the address, and the song, and the what occurs, and the song that is sung by the people who suffer in Gehenna appear after this pasuk test. This pasuk is a general pasuk, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very good. He satisfies every living creature. What does that have to do with Gehenna? Absolutely nothing. And that's exactly the point, because it's so frightening, we can't actually tell you what goes on in Gehenna. You want to know, here's the address, go to Mizmor Kuf Zayin. If we wouldn't give you this address, it's not likely you would ever find it on your own, put A and B together to make sense out of this. And when we read these psukim, now we have a much greater, and indeed these psukim really explain in detail what happens, the process of Gehenna. Okay, let's go to another idea. Yeah.
After the 12 months.
Yeah.
You're out of Gehenna.
I have no idea what goes on there, believe me. Yes, you're the wrong guy.
Where are you?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I don't pretend to know.
There must be a person.
I have no idea.
You want to play in your career?
They do say.
He wants to know what to act.
There is such a concept.
Career guy. That's how bad it's called.
Yeah.
Adam's only 12.
Yeah.
It's
only what?
Adam's only 12 months.
Yeah.
Oshrat in Yiddish that you can take.
You can take it. Okay. Okay.
After 12 months.
I hear. Okay, but there is such a concept. I don't know what this means. I'm just saying words. I have no idea what this means. That you have to. There is such a concept. You have to be zoicha. Zecher to Gehenna. In other words, Gehenna is a process. It's the last step in the process before you enter Gan Eden.
Oh, okay.
And many neshamos, it could take, they have all these spooky stories, it could take them centuries. We don't understand what time, we have no understanding of time in the Olam HaEmes. But in our, from our perception, it can take centuries until the neshama is ready, is allowed to go to Gehenna, to go through the final process of tikkun, where it can then enter into Gan Eden. So it's not, okay, big deal, so they'll be Gehenna for 12 months. After 12 months, okay, that's it, you finish. You first have to go through remedial courses to get ready to be zoicha, to be admitted. It's like getting into Harvard. To get into Gehenna, there's a lot of work. Amelos, Yigia.
What is that called?
So we have no, there are different terms. It's not so simple. Okay, let's talk some halacha now. Halacha, yeah.
I do see the parallel.
Yes?
I feel Harvard. Yeah, parallel, I see that.
You do see the parallel. So what about Yale? Yale, is there a parallel? Okay. Let's go to a halacha concept. There is such a tradition that most people need to go through this process. We don't know what it means. Very few yechidim are zochah to be on such an exalted level where they're exempt from this. We don't know what this means. It's such a concept, you don't have to actually suffer. It's enough just to see it. That itself is a tikkun. But there is such a concept that the shamas need this. Therefore, a child, in order to free or to cool the experience, the intensity of Gehenna, should say Kaddish for a parent. How long should you say Kaddish for a parent? Well, 12 months, because Mishpat Shel Rishon BeGehenna is 12 months. So therefore, you say Kaddish for 12 months. But if a child's going to say Kaddish for a parent for 12 months, he's making a public statement to the world that my parent is a Rasha, my parent is evil, and he needs to go to Gehenna. So therefore, the custom is, you don't say Gehenna for a full 12 months, you say Kaddish for less than 12 months. How much less? So there are many, many customs. Some have the custom to say it for 11 months and one day. Some have the custom to say it for 11 months and one week. Some have the custom to say it for 12 months minus one day. So there are many customs, but the point is the person has to stop short from saying Kaddish for 12 months to show Chas V'Shalom. The reason why I'm saying Kaddish is not because my relative needs to go through Gehenna. That would be a terrible disgrace. That's a lack of kibud av v'aim, a disgrace. It's because I just want to give the neshama nachas ruach. By saying Kaddish or downing for the other, people respond to my brachas. That somehow, we have no idea what this means, gives the neshama nachas ruach, and that's why I'm doing it. But no one should make the mistakes. I'm going to stop short. I'm not going to say it for a full 12 months. L'may nafkamina, very big nafkamina. Let's say a parent says to a child, my child, I'm about to go. I know where I stand. I know, I look back at my life, I'm not a good person. I know that I'm going to Gehenna. Do me a toiva. Please say Kaddish for 12 months. I need every day. I'm going to need every single day. Is a child allowed to listen to his parents and say Kaddish for 12 months if they instruct him to do so? Chilukei deos. Some say yes, some say not. Another nafkamina. This is an important nafkamina. Let's say this is very common today, not very common, but someone dies and there's no one to say Kaddish. So the family doesn't have anyone to say Kaddish, so they hire someone. Very common. They go to yeshiva, you give a donation. Okay, there's a whole business, there's a whole industry. You pay money for a Kaddish. So that person, according to many poskim, should say Kaddish for 12 months. That if you're not saying Kaddish for your own relative, and you're saying Kaddish to someone else, there's no one really knows what you're doing. There's no one who pays attention 12 months. A relative, they look at you, you're saying for your father, saying for your mother, it's 12 months. There's no harm in saying Kaddish for 12 months to the day. So that appears to be well accepted, that if you're hired to say Kaddish, you say Kaddish not for 11 months in one day, you say Kaddish for a full 12 months. Not everyone follows that. Some will only say it for 11 months, but generally, if I'm not mistaken, that's what's done. It's done for 12 months or someone else. Okay, another nafkamina, halacha lemaisa. Okay, this is where you get into the world of chassidim, and this is where they really go to town. On Shabbos, there's no Gehenna. Okay, that we're going to come down in a few moments. There's no Gehenna on Shabbos. So when do they fire up Gehenna? When do they turn on the ovens? Mitzvah Shabbos. Mitzvah Shabbos, when they fire up Gehenna. So the Hasidim, they have a long Vuhu Rachum. They sing Vuhu to extend. It's a token fulfillment of extending the Shabbos, even by a mashru, by saying the word Vuhu with an extended nigun melody, and that basically instructs the world of Gehenna not so fast. Not so fast. Don't get excited. Extend Shabbos a little bit longer in order not to fire up Gehenna. And there are people that have a custom that they delay. They do not daven Maariv Mitzvah Shabbos as long as possible. They do not make Havdalah even until Tuesday, especially when someone is in Avelis, the year of Avelis. So he's very particular when he is in that year. And if he's in Avelis, he personally will go to the latest minion in town in order that his relatives who say in Kaddishur should postpone the beginning of Mitzvah Shabbos as long as possible. What this means, no one knows what this means. What is this all about? Okay, whatever it is. And therefore, Mitzvah Shabbos, there's a very, all of the times when you want to fight, it's a mitzvah deraisa to fight with a ritzicha for the Amud. When is the time that you're supposed to fight the most to bring out the heavy guns and the baseball bat? Mitzvah Shabbos. Because Mitzvah Shabbos is the most critical time that the neshama needs the Kaddish. It shouldn't. It shouldn't rush. It should be Levach. So Mitzvah Shabbos is the most critical time to daven, because that's when the fires of Gehenna open up, and that's why it has become a craze among us that every single person who is the chiyuv has to have their own separate minion. Yeah.
Heard any one reason why some has yahrzeit?
Oh, when it comes to Neshama Yisera. When it comes to Neshama Yisera. So it's within the halacha, not mistaken. Okay, he's saying something else. If a person is yahrzeit during the week, during the week,
yeah,
the middle of the week, so then he is a chiyuv to daven Mitzvah Shabbos that week. Why? Because just like the neshama, every Shabbos a person receives a neshama yisera. The Shabbos before the yahrzeit is the yahrzeit of the neshama yisera. It was the last time the neshama yisera left this world. Every Shabbos a person receives a neshama yisera. When a person dies, that neshama yisera no longer comes down to this world. So the Shabbos before the yahrzeit is the yahrzeit of the neshama yisera. So there is support on the halacha. A person is a chiv, you have kedima. It's not foul. People think that it's so mystical. People do not follow this technically, but alpi halacha. A person who has yahrzeit during the week, let's say it's yahrzeit on a Wednesday or a Thursday, he has kedima for the Amon over someone saying Kaddish, not Shloshim, not some mitoch Shloshim, but someone mitoch Yud Beis Shana. Yes, he bumps. Meikar Hadin. Now, I would not advise you to try to take that check to the bank. I would not advise you to try to enforce it, especially if the person doesn't. People who know about it will give it up right away. But not everyone is comfortable with this concept called the Neshama Yisera. Not everyone is willing to give up their Mitzvah Shabbos for someone who has yahrzeit during the week. So it's very common that people look the other way and they do not enforce this halacha, because this whole thing of davening anyway is very shaky. But Me'ikar Hadin, a yahrzeit during the week, the Mitzvah Shabbos before, has that person has kedim because Neshama Yisera. Okay, but generally, Teuchi Beis Chodesh, it's the very beginning, Davening Mitzvah Shabbos, because that's when Gehenna is fired up and you want to delay that or at least mitigate it as much as possible by davening Maariv of that Mitzvah Shabbos. Now here's something very interesting. It's brought down of Yaakov Emden and many others that when a person says Perek Shira on Shabbos, it's not such a bad idea to say Perek Shira every single day whenever you can. It's once you know what's going on, it opens up new worlds. You don't say Gehenna on Shabbos. Okay, you can say the whole Perek Shira, but when you come to this Gehinom Omer, okay, it's the way, real way to pronounce, by the way, is Gehinom, the Valley of Hinom. The world, the Olam, says Gehenna, Gehenna. That's how the world says. There must be something to it if that's how the world says. Gay, but gay Ben?
Yeah.
Gay Ben?
Ben Hinom. That's how it's described.
Gay Hinom.
Yeah.
What's...
It's really Gay
Ben?
Ben Hinnom.
Ben? The name of the person was Ben Hinnom?
So it became
Gay Gehenim. Gehenim. All right, I don't know why. I don't know why. This is the way the Olam says Gehenim. Gehenim. I don't know. It's Gay Hinnom. Whatever. Whatever it is. Shabbos, if a person says Perek Shira on Shabbos, he is supposed to omit Gehenim Oimer. Because on Shabbos there is no, Gehenim is not in operation. If it's not in operation, so there's no Shira. Now simply, how would you understand this concept? Very simple. Gehenim is not operational, and therefore Gehenim is not singing Shira, or the Neshamos who are being purified, who are being rectified, they're not thanking Hashem for this opportunity to cleanse their soul from transgression. So Shira is not being sung, not by the institution, and not by the members. So there's no need for us to say the Shira, right? That's the simple interpretation. So I saw here from a Sefer, I do not remember which Sefer I saw this from, an incredible idea. It's just the opposite. Let's take a simple example. Yaakov Avinu fights with the Sar Shal Esav. It comes morning, the Sar Shal Esav says to Yaakov, Shalcheni ki ola hashachar. Chazal tell us, today is my day to sing Shira. And this is the justification for my existence. The only reason why I came to this world was to sing Shira. If I don't sing Shira, then I don't exist. I gotta go. So Yaakov lets him go. Singing Shira is what gives you legitimacy. It's what gives you life. And that's why the Malach, I'm not going to say Shira, I don't even exist. I have to sing Shira. I'll give you another example. Noi Shemesh Begivoin Doin. Yoshua was fighting with the Canaan, and things were getting a little tight. So he was mispalo. That, you know, son, maybe hold off a little bit. Don't set. We're not ready yet. We need a few more hours to complete the battle. The Medrash says, how did Yoshua have the koyach to stop the sun from moving, or the earth from moving, whatever this means, because after all, the earth really is flat, we know, and the sun goes around the earth. That's the way it really is. How did Yoshua have koyach to do such a feat? The answer is, says the Medrash, he was able to prevent the sun from singing Shira. It's a very critical Medrash to understand what we're about to say now. He was able to tell the sun, I want you to stop singing Shira. The sun, Hashem, we have now you learned that pasuk. The sun sings a Shira. If the sun does not sing Shira, it doesn't have energy. Its existence, its whole essence is to praise Hashem. And if you don't fulfill your purpose, then you don't exist. So the sun stops singing Shira. And when it stopped singing Shira, it ran out of gasoline and it stopped moving. So the way the sun, Yeshua stopped the sun is by preventing it from giving forth kilos, praise. Why does Gehenna not operate on Shabbos? It's not because, oh, it's Shabbos, there's no Gehenna, so therefore we on this earth are not going to sing the Shira. It's just the opposite. We do not sing Shira on Shabbos. We do not represent Gehenim in singing their Shira on Shabbos. So Mamela, there is no Gehenim on Shabbos. It's not the Pshat. On Shabbos, there's no Gehenim, so we're not going to say Perek Shira. No. On Shabbos, we prevent Gehenim from singing Shira. We prevent it from fulfilling its function, its role of purging the sinners from their wrongdoings, which is very painful for them. So Mamela, if it's not going to sing Shira, perform its function, Gehenim is shut down. It's not operational on Shabbos. That's the pshat, and that it's a much deeper meaning of why we don't sing Shira on Shabbos. It's kedai to say the whole Perek Shira on Shabbos just so that you don't say the Shira for Gehenim, because that is how you can shut it down.
So it's a reversal.
It's a reversal. It's a brilliant idea. You have to shut down Gehenim by saying the whole Perek Shira and omitting this particular song. And that is an idea which I really found to be very pleasing. Okay, let me give you another medish. Now, what does this mean? This is another medish. Okay, very clear. We're out of time. Hinei toiv me'oid. Vayar lekim es kol asher asa. Now, what does it say in the pasuk? Vayar lekim v'yichul asher v'esuchot v'mechal lekim v'yemushim kol machul asher asa. Vayar lekim es kol asher asa. What does it say? V'hinei toiv me'oid. So the medrash says, forget about that vav. Okay, now you can interpret this as you may. I'll leave this to you for your interpretation. The medrash, just take the words, Hine tov ma'ot. Forget about that vav. Hine, Hashem looked at the world. Hine tov ma'ot. Excellent. It's quite a feat, quite an accomplishment. The medrash says, Medrash Rabbah Perik Test, two tests. Test. This is Gan Eden. When Hashem saw the world, He said, "Hinei tov ma'od Gan Eden." This is Gan Eden. The vav, together with the Hinei tov ma'od, is Gehenna. The same exact phrase.
Reverse.
Oh, so what's the significance? Very good. So the difference is the vav ha'mahapich. That is a very scary concept. The difference is there's very little difference between Gehenna and Gan Eden. You make a little mistake. A little mistake can take you on the wrong path. A little mistake in life can result in the difference between the neshama going to Gehenna, the neshama going to Gan Eden, the vav ha-mahapich. It's all, I'll leave this to you to develop on your own. It's all that vav, a little vav in the beginning before we come to tov ma'od. Gehenna is also very good because Gehenna is an opportunity to purge oneself of one's sin. Like we said, a person has to be zocha to Gehenna. It's not so simple. You're allowed admittance to Gehenna. But the difference between the two is just the vav. Now there's a medrash. The medrash is a very strange medrash. We think it explains a little bit what a Gehenna is. You know, there's a very good book, by the way, by Rabbi Nosson Silifkin. Is that name familiar to you?
The animal
rabbi. So years ago, he wrote a book on Perek Shir in English. It's a very good book, very profound, very different than a lot of the other Sfarim I've come across. He has a very unique approach to Perek Shira. You would figure that's perfect up his alley, because most of the Perek Shira is about animals. Okay, we have a long way to go to get to the animals. We have to first deal with nature. Perek Shira includes many things. So he says that most of what we know about Gehenna comes from the Goyim. We have been brainwashed and influenced by the Christians into what Gehenna is. And everything that they say is totally connected Chazal. And it's almost impossible for us to purge their influence of what Gehenna is, Rahman al-Tzlan, from our minds. We're just so influenced. Go to Gehenna, you're going to burn and you're going to suffer. That's not what it is. At least we don't really know what Gehenna is. But from Chazal, the way Chazal described Gehenna, it's nothing like the way the Christians have brainwashed the world what Gehenna is. So you have to be very, very careful, he says, when you talk about Gehenna. And also, you know, it opens up a whole new understanding that these words really fit into Perek Shira. Because you look at Perek Shira, Gehenna and Perek Shira, it's not something you would expect. Yeah, that's because when we look at Gehenna, we think of the Christian understanding of Gehenna. Then Taka doesn't fit. It doesn't fit into Perek Shira. But when you look at Gehenna through the eyes of Chazal, it's a whole different world. And then it does fit very much into what Perek Shira is all about. And that itself is a very powerful limud. But there's a medrash. The medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the medrash quotes these two pasuk. Hine tov ma'od zeh Gan Eden. V'hine tov ma'od, this is Gehenna. And the medrash has a very strange mashal which doesn't fit. The mashal is mashal to a melech who has a beautiful orchard. And in the middle of the orchard, he has an otzar. He has a storage facility or a palace, some type of structure. And he tells all the workers, anyone who works hard in the vineyard, who does what they're supposed to do, does their assigned task, will merit to go into the otzar, into the treasure chest, into the treasure structure, into the house. And anyone who, and that's Gan Eden, that's Gan Eden. And anyone who doesn't do what they're supposed to do will not be allowed to enter into into the palace. So that's not the way you would finish off the Medrash if you were writing this from a Christian point of view. If you were writing this from a Christian point of view, you would say anyone that works very hard is going to go into the palace. And anyone that doesn't work very hard, it's lazy, you're going to be taken out of the garden and you're going to be taken who knows where, shipped off on a train into some pit and burned and destroyed and obliterated. That's not what it says in the Medrash. It's the Medrash in the beginning of Bereishis. Test.
Stay in the garden.
You're just going to be denied access into the palace.
But just stay in the garden.
You'll be in the garden. But that's Gehenna. That's Gehenna. No one's punishing you. No one's torturing you. No one's burning you. But I'm just not allowed to enter. The knowledge that there's something more, there's a delight that's available, and I am denied, that's Gehenna. It's a whole different understanding of Gehenna. It's a whole... Don't get carried away now. The Christians, they do have a good point. You know, they do have a good scare tactic, which does work a little bit. But it's Gehenna is, according to Chazal, the realization you could have had more. That's really how you punish a person. You show him what you could have had. Look at this delicious food. If only you would behave, you could have it.
But there are plenty of chazals that indicate punishment.
Okay, you have to balance it out. It's just something that's very different. It's very different, and it fits very well with this thing called v'hinei tov me'ot. Because what is it? What is this medrash? Is the medrash on v'hinei tov me'ot? V'hinei tov me'ot. This is Gan Eden. V'hinei. It's the same thing. It's the same exact pasuk. The only difference is the. And the in this interpretation is denying you, look, there it is, but you're an outsider. You're not connected to it. You're on the other side of the vav. You don't have access. The pain of not knowing what you could have had, that itself is a form of Gehenna. Okay, there are a few more things, but I think we have enough, so we'll leave it with this.